Massive hour still to come. Take a few of your calls a little bit later on. And again, Brad Scott's press conference. He's not holding that press conference on the way in to the competition committee meeting. He's holding it at 2:30 on the way out of it. So looking forward to hearing what he has to say after the meeting, as opposed to the quick chat on the way in to tell us what they might be discussing. Dwayne's Wood for Kogan Mobile Black Friday offer. Buy one, get one free. And for GWM Cannon Ute, available at Essendon, GWM Havel. Simon Hill has been good enough to join us again in his regular spot. He's the voice of world football and the host of The Global Game, 8 p.m. Thursdays on SEN right across the country. A great opening weekend of the A-League and some pretty interesting stuff still happening in the EPL. As we welcome Simon, great to have you on. Welcome to you, Simon. Thanks for coming back.
Pleasure, Dwayne. How are you, mate?
I'm good. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the A-League? And it's great to see a capacity crowd. Perth pulling a big number in that opening game told us that they might be able to pull some big numbers for all their home games this year if we're lucky.
Well, look, you'd hope so. I mean, obviously, a lot of them were attracted by the debut of Daniel Sturridge, who's the big name that they got during the off-season from the UK. You'd like to think it's also a bit because they're not going to see them for a few weeks. They've got to head off on the road because of the COVID restrictions over there in WA. So they're not going to be back in Western Australia, I think, before Christmas. So it was great to see, 17,000, which I think is an A-League record crowd, not their overall record crowd. I think they got 18,000 for a game against South Melbourne back in the days of the NSL. But yeah, that was terrific. We had a good crowd in Sydney as well, obviously, for the derby, over 23,000 for that. So it's nice to have the football back and nice to have the fans back in the stadiums.
And 7,000 to watch Western United at GMHBA Stadium as well. It almost sort of makes me wonder whether Geelong should have had its own team by now. There's so many Geelong lovers of the world game that, look, who knows where Western United are going to end up. They might build this beautiful new stadium at Tarnit, yeah, and it's going to be fantastic. But at least the fans come from Geelong when they come to Geelong.
Well, look, to be fair, a fair few of those might have been Victory fans as well.
That's true.
From Melbourne. But look, you know, there's certainly a football community in Geelong. There's a community in Western Melbourne in general. The issue for Western United is that they've got to start building this stadium. We've been waiting for this now. I think this is the third year. There's still no signs, as far as I'm aware, that they're about to commence construction. And I don't think it's helping the club in the early stage of their development, really, to build that fan base. If you're playing, in Geelong, and then you go to Ballarat, and then you go to Melbourne to play at Amy Park, and you're playing a game in Launceston or, wherever it is, they've become nomads. And we knew that was going to be the case in the first couple of years. But, the premise of Western United being in the competition was, or at least one of them, was that they were going to build this stadium. So I'd really like to see them get on with that, to be honest. The stadium in Geelong is fantastic, but it's an AFL stadium. It's too big. They need this 15,000 state-of-the-art stadium in Wyndham, and they need to get cracking with it.
I did watch a little bit of soccer across the weekend. I even watched a little bit of QPR play. I watched a bit of La Liga. The competition, the A-League, and even watching Western Sydney and Sydney FC play out a draw, to hear the fans going crazy, even turning their back on the game at times, which is their tradition, in the 80th minute. But the atmosphere was great over the weekend for the A-League games, I thought. And the standard was pretty damn good.
Yeah, well, look, obviously we believe that the atmosphere that our fans create is pretty unique in Australian sports. It's been, unfortunately, killed off a little bit over the last few years for one reason or another, and that would probably require another hour-long show to go into all the details as to why. Yeah. But, when we get the active fans in particular inside the stadiums making that noise, people enjoy it. It's particularly when you have the right size stadium to create that atmosphere, and certainly CommBank Stadium in Parramatta is, one of the best in the country for our code of football. That's one of the reasons why, people like me, and obviously I'm from a different part of the world originally, but that's why we're attracted to football. You don't just, in our sport, you don't just spectate, you actually participate. And it makes for a great experience. And, we were building that for quite a few years quite nicely until we self-imploded a little bit, but we're on the way back, and it was great to see that those active fans were creating that noise. And so far as the product on the pitch is concerned, there's a little bit too much conversation about the standard of is it good enough? Is it as good as the Premier League? It's never going to be as good as the Premier League. We discussed this last week. Yeah. It doesn't have to be. It's ours, and it's our local competition. There are 200 countries around the world who each have their own football competition. If we're all going to say, well, none of it's as good as the Premier League, well, we may as well pack them all up. And that's not what the world game is about. It's about the global game, and that's why we love it.
And is anybody playing as good a football as Liverpool and Man City and Chelsea right now around the world? It seems as if they've almost cleared out in the EPL as well.
There will be arguments to say that there are teams in Spain and Germany and maybe one or two other places, Paris Saint-Germain, who are the equal of the likes of Liverpool, Manchester City and Chelsea. Obviously, the Premier League gets a lot of attention here because it's very accessible for us. It's English speaking. The product that they put out is second to none, I will say that. It's a global phenomenon, really. It's survived and thrived in probably three global financial crises, which is extraordinary. And the rights fees keep going up and up and up, which obviously allows the clubs to invest not only in infrastructure, but also fantastic players, the world's best coaches, world's best practice, really. So, as an Englishman by birth, I'm sort of quite proud of that in many ways. But it's not the only competition in the world. As I say, it's just that it's the one that gets our attention. But clubs like Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, maybe not Barcelona at the moment because they're in a bit of a dip, but Paris Saint-Germain, they're just as good, if not better in some ways, than the Premier League clubs as well.
Man U, speaking of crises, they're hopefully on the way to rectifying theirs. We talked almost 3 weeks ago now about whether Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was going to be told thanks for coming, but no more. It took a little longer than we thought, but the 4-1 loss to Watford, obviously the straw that broke the camel's back.
Absolutely. There's no way he could have survived that. It's been a long time coming. Quite frankly, I don't know why they haven't made that decision earlier. They've almost wasted half a season, really. And look, it's not all Solskjaer's fault. There's a lot of structural issues with Manchester United that go higher up with the club. Ed Woodward, who's been involved in the transfers over the last few years, is not hugely popular. He hasn't, to my eyes at least, done a particularly good job. There are issues with the owners who are obviously American. They're remote from the fan base, rarely talk to the fan base up until these recent issues with the Super League and now Solskjaer. The stadium, which is one of the world's great theatres, has been allowed to sort of decay in many ways, to the point where they've had rain pouring in through the roofs in one of the stands at Old Trafford. That's really unacceptable. And all the while, the Glazers, who own the club, have leveraged huge debt on Manchester United and take a lot of money out of the club, whilst across town with Manchester City and the likes of Liverpool and Chelsea, they've been invested hugely in their football club. So United have slipped a fair way. Obviously, they found it very difficult to replace Sir Alex Ferguson, who was there for years and years and won so many trophies. And it seems as though they've been grasping around for the answer for many years now. It's clearly not Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Who the next man will be, I don't know. I would imagine Zinedine Zidane will be high on their list. He's won the Champions League 3 times with Real Madrid, but his lack of English skills may well present a problem. I think it's a move that had to happen. They were not just beaten at Watford. They were abject. They were absolutely rotten. And that speaks to bigger problems. So I think he had to go.
Ange is going well. Celtic going well. And it looks like it's a nice marriage.
Yeah, look, Ange, we always said when he went to Celtic, if they gave him just a little bit of time, he would turn things around there. And he seems to have done it already. Obviously, it's still very early days. I'm not saying they're going to win all the trophies on offer in Scotland this year, but his first shot at getting to a major final, and he's done it. He's in the Scottish League Cup final. They defeated St Johnston by the only goal last week, a goal from James Forrest in a tight game. And Ange has got a shot at silverware, and this is what he does. He wins trophies wherever he goes. I never had any doubt that he would do that, providing they had a little bit of patience. And there was a moment, even after only seven or eight games, he'd lost three or four of those, and you know the fan base were started to get on his back a bit, the media the same, and he thought, oh, you know, this could be a problem for Ange. But he's managed to weather that storm. Obviously, you know, I hope he goes on and wins that Scottish League Cup final, which, strangely enough, is going to be against Hibernian, who contain another Aussie in Martin Boyle, who scored a hat-trick against Rangers in the other semi-final. So Ange's going quite nicely at the moment and having a bit of fun as well with the Scottish media with some of his quotes, which is quite funny to see from this point of view.
Sam Kerr's going quite nicely as well. In fact, the Matildas in the US play in Australia on Saturday, don't they?
Yeah, first in a two-game series. The first time that they've been in Australia, the Americans, this is for 21 years, which surprised me, actually. I think the last time they played here was at the Sydney Olympics. So it's been a long time between drinks. They're obviously one of the world's best women's teams. Beat us for the third, fourth-place playoff in Tokyo for the bronze medal. So the Matildas will have a bit of revenge on their minds. The first game is in Sydney, and then the second one is in Newcastle next week. So it should be an exciting series. I mean, I called the two games against Brazil in the last mini-series, and they were hugely enjoyable games of football to watch. Lots of goals, lots of action, and I'm sure we'll get decent crowds for both those matches.
Can't wait as well. I'm looking forward to seeing them as well. Great to have you, Simon. Always good to be able to have a chat about the World Game with you. The fans love it. Plenty of support coming through on the text saying we should do this more often. It's great that we're doing it once a week at least. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks very much, Dwayne. Global game, 8 o'clock till 10 Thursday night.